Lawrence, why do this series?
Well, we have what we're trying to do is take an issue that has been playing out for years on the national level, first with Congress, then before the U.S. Supreme Court, and most recently in the presidential election, and explain it in the best way we can through a Southwest Virginia lens, to take this very complicated national issue and largely through interviews with people who are directly affected by the various provisions, explain to our readers just what the implications of the Affordable Care Act will be. We decided to start it this year because even though the act began to take effect 3 years ago, some of the major provisions will be kicking in at the end of this year, actually on January the 1st of 2014. And because it's such a complicated law, it has so many pieces that we are trying to break out some of the issues into individual stories that will focus in as much detail as we can on that specific provision of the new law.
And, of course, you're starting this Sunday because there's a meeting in Richmond coming up next week.
That's right. One of the big parts of the law, some people say the most important part of the law, is an expansion of the Medicaid program in Virginia. Medicaid is the government insurance program that covers the poor and the disabled. It's often confused with Medicare, but that government program is, of course, directed at senior citizens. When the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the Affordable Care Act last summer, it made a major revision to one of its requirements. The Affordable Care Act directed states to increase the eligibility requirements for people covered by Medicaid to up to 138% of the current federal poverty guideline. The U.S. Supreme Court said that you cannot force states to do that, that that is an option that is left up to the individual states. Virginia now has that question confronting it. The most recent General Assembly passed a two-year budget that would allow for the expansion of Medicaid, but only if certain improvements are made to the law. It created a commission that meets for the first time Monday in Richmond, consisting of five members of the House of Delegates and five senators, and they will decide probably between now and November whether the identified reforms have been accomplished and then whether Medicaid should in fact be expanded in Virginia in accordance with the federal law.
And if it is expanded, there's some 14,000 people living here in the metro area that would be eligible for that?
Yes, and on a larger scale, as many as 500,000 people in 400,000 people up to in Virginia that would be eligible. And when you're talking about the category of people that would qualify for assistance, in many cases, people that receive no assistance right now for their medical bills, 138% of the federal poverty guideline works out to about $15,000 a year for an individual and about $32,000 annual income for a family of four.
Who will we be meeting in this first installment?
One thing that we discovered has been perhaps a bigger challenge than I thought it would be is finding people willing to share their stories. But when you think about it, that's not too surprising because the people that are speaking to us are sharing two very private matters. They're talking about how much money they make, and they're talking about their health issues. Those two topics are ones that many people would prefer not to share with the world. And so we're very grateful to the people that we have spoken to so far. One lady who lives in Roanoke is unemployed. She's been looking for a job. She worked. She's 61 years old. She worked her whole life. She paid taxes. She is sleepless at the thought of becoming homeless, and she receives very little assistance right now for her medical bills. We spoke to a couple from Salem, actually David Ress, my colleague, who is working with me on the series, spoke to a elderly couple In Salem, the husband is disabled. He is going blind. Even though they do get some Medicare assistance, they also would qualify for some Medicaid assistance under the new law. They have a limited fixed income, mostly Social Security benefits from their between the two of them. They've worked 90 years. But the money runs out at the end of every month, and they usually eat bologna sandwiches and beans until the next Social Security check arrives in the mail the first of the month.
So the installment really focuses on the neighbor next door, somebody down the street, could be someone that you know, family member.
It does. But the trick is that we really need the personal stories to put a human face on the issue. But the reality is that it's such a complicated law and system that's being implemented that we have to, I guess, go the extra step and use the personal stories to as an introduction, but then get into the real bulk of the law. One thing that makes that so challenging is that, for example, the Kaiser Family Foundation on its website has what it calls a summary of the Affordable Care Act. It is small print, single space summary that runs for 13 pages. That is the equivalent of the soundbite of the Affordable Care Act.
And is it written in English that you and I can understand, or is it legalese?
Not I. It's not so much legalese as it is bureaucraties. Part of what the criticism is that we already have a very cumbersome bureaucratic system run by the government, and it's being made even more so. That certainly is an argument that's being made. But I think the fact of the matter is that it's just such a complicated system. Anyone who's had their benefits explained to them in open enrollment for insurance or you know, been to multiple physicians, you know, knows that it's just not a very, very simple system. And whether this simplifies it or not certainly remains to be seen. But I think starting with the Medicaid expansion, I think the real question is whether the Affordable Care Act's overall mission of making health care accessible for everyone is accomplished. And I think the first major step in that process for Southwest Virginia and Virginia begins Monday when the Legislative Commission embarks on its discussion of expanding the Medicaid system.
So Sunday's installment basically is an introduction to what's going to happen Monday and an introduction to your entire series. What other topics are you going to discuss? And is this series going to be once a month, once every 2 weeks?
We don't have a real well-defined timetable. We anticipate a number of stories, at least five or six more. Some of them will be timed to certain events, as the Medicaid story is to the meeting on Monday. On October the 1st, open enrollment will begin for the market exchange, which will be the system where people with relatively low incomes, those who don't qualify for Medicaid but make up to 400% of the federal poverty guideline, they will be eligible to purchase insurance subsidized at more affordable rates through this exchange, which will largely be online. Some people have compared it to purchasing an airline ticket on Expedia. You go, there a number of insurance companies are participating. You shop around for the best rate. You have to qualify. You know, if you are above the income bracket, if you already have adequate insurance through your employer, you're not eligible. So that's another installment, is trying to explain how that exchange will work in Virginia. Another major provision that is kicking in the 1st of January will apply to employers that have 50 or more employees. They will be required to provide insurance or face financial penalties. That is sending ripples through the small business community, and we hope to do an installment looking at that. I suspect that this will heat up as a political issue, even though, as many people have pointed out, it is the law. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld it. There are enough moving parts to create lots of drama between now and January 1st. By the time the gubernatorial election heats up, Medicaid expansion will probably still be a very open question as to whether or not it will happen in Virginia. We expect the gubernatorial candidates will be talking some about that, and so we hope to do. Probably David, who covers politics for us, will be doing a story as the November elections approach about the political side of this. And I do think that the reality with this case is that the policy and the politics of the Affordable Care Act still remain very closely intertwined. I think lots of people's views are influenced by that, as opposed to the practical implications of the act. And frankly, many people, I think, still, and I'll include myself among them, don't understand all of the complexities, because this is such a complicated issue. The Kaiser Family Foundation did a poll just earlier this year that found that 2/3 of the uninsured and a majority of Americans say they still have too little information right now about the Affordable Care Act to know how they're affected by it. And so, you know, again, what we're trying to do, taking small chunks at a time over an extended period, we're attempting to bring at least a little bit more clarity to what is a very, very complicated system.
All right. Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you.